Hey folks, welcome to episode 343 of the Fantastic Forecast. I'm Dave Elliott, and I spell potato with an E. On today's episode, Fantastic Four 343 from August 1990, Nuke Busters by Walter Simonson. So finally, we're back where we left off a couple issues ago. The FF have returned from their adventure dealing with Galactus and the Black Celestial in the time stream. So they returned home after their time travel adventure, thinking that everything was normal. And so far, everything does seem normal. So what do you have to do after a long trip? Laundry, which is exactly what the FF have to do. Of course, they've been wearing the same FF uniforms for the whole time, so it doesn't seem like they'd have too much laundry. You know, this makes me wonder, do they ever have to wash Johnny's uniform? He's flaming on and off all the time. You would think all the dirt and the grime would be burnt off. Anyway, Reed is using his long stretchy arms to carry a massive amount of laundry over to the washing machine. I guess they're not familiar with the concept of a laundry basket. Sue suggests to Reed that he invent a special detergent that measures itself out, loads the washing machine, loads the cycle, and dries everything when it's finished. They do have something like that. It's called a maid. And even though the FF seem loaded with millions of dollars, living in a 5-story penthouse apartment in Manhattan, they never hire a maid. Reed is such a cheapskate. Just lets his wife do everything. Reed makes a joke about coming up with an experiment to create such a detergent like that, but adds that he worried about putting all the Chinese laundries in New York out of business. I guess he doesn't want to compete with the Calgon and their ancient Chinese secret. Is that some kind of stereotype about Chinese people, by the way? Do they have cleaner clothes than the rest of us? So Sue asked Reed to go check on Johnny. He's been a little out of it and listless since his time being under Nebula's mind control. Reed heads out into one of his labs where he has Johnny strapped up to this huge contraption way up in the air, like 50 feet up in the air. I don't know how the room is so big. Down below, Reed is at one of the control panels, and the she thing is at another, and Ben is just standing around watching. Johnny says he'd like to hurry up and come down. He doesn't want to miss the newest episode of Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks. Boy, that's a bad pop culture reference from Simonson, a show that crashed and burned in 14 months. This is really a comic from 1990. Reed tells him they're almost done, just a few more revolutions on the machine to test his balance and perception. So Sharon tells Reed she has some stuff to take care of, and her and Ben leave the room. In the hall, Sharon tells Ben that she feels like something's wrong, but she can't figure out what it is. Things just seem a little off. Ben says that maybe they'll feel better after having a little date, maybe catch a movie. He tells her that first, he's going to go grab a newspaper. So the two of them head off in different directions, and Sharon starts to notice little things, like Sue's potted plants. She thought they were geraniums, not tulips. Her bedsheet seems to have a different pattern. And then it occurs to her, that's crazy. Who would break into FF headquarters and change the plants and the bedspreads? Huh? Plant man? Bedspread man? So back with Reed and Johnny, the experiment is over, and Reed has the results. He says that everything is fine with Johnny, he just needs some sleep. But then he notices Johnny has fallen asleep in the chair. Uh-oh, I hope he set his VCR for Twin Peaks. It's going to be a long time before that comes out on DVD. Actually, maybe he fell asleep watching Twin Peaks. That's the kind of effect it used to have on me. Sharon enters the room and approaches Reed. She tells him the things at Four Freedoms Plaza are kind of different, and suggests that Reed go have a look at his lab equipment and see if everything there is as it should be. Reed says he'll do that right away and let her know. Meanwhile, at the White House, an aide is telling the president that satellites show that the Russian and Eastern Bloc troops have amassed along the German border, and they better be ready for trouble. The president tells his aide to bring the armed forces to DEFCON 1, full alert, saying, "If Stalin wants a showdown, here and now, we'll give him one." Of course, Russian leader Joseph Stalin died in 1953, so this is a pretty good indication that something really screwy is going on here. Of course, I'm assuming they're talking about Joseph Stalin and not Swedish jazz artist Cecilia Stalin, who would have been too young at the time to be the Russian leader. Not a lot of people out there with the last name Stalin. It's like Hitler. Who wants to share the same last name with two of history's worst mass murderers? Back with Sue, she's trying to call the Power family, who have been babysitting Franklin, but she keeps getting a message that says that she's reached an invalid number. So she checks with the operator, but still doesn't have any luck tracking down the Power family. Reed, meanwhile, is checking out all of his equipment and giving his more exotic electronics a good microscopic examination. Funny, I thought that they kept all their most exotic electronics in the nightstand next to Sue's side of the bed, out on the street. Ben reaches a newsstand and buys a copy of the latest Daily Bugle. He immediately turns to check out the sports section and is surprised that the Cleveland Indians have a player who is leading the league in home runs. The Washington Senators are in second place to the Yankees, and the Phoenix Pistols are leading the National League West. I'm pretty sure a team with the name Phoenix Pistols never existed, but I don't know anything about baseball, especially not the 1990 baseball season. But Ben seems to think this is very unusual. Of course, he finds it very, very unusual when he reads the front page, where he learns that Joe Stalin is still the premier of Russia, which is bad, and that Dan Quayle is a president of the United States, even worse. He has to rush home to let everyone know. Back with Johnny, he's awake and he hears a news report on the television about President Quayle ordering the military to full alert, and he jumps up. "It can't be," he says. Soon, all five members of the Fantastic Four are in one room talking about all the stuff they've discovered. Reed's equipment isn't right. Sue can't find the Power family. Sharon says that this isn't their home. And Ben says this isn't their planet. Reed theorizes that when they came back from the time bubble, they ended up in an alternate timeline, one where the Cold War is still going on. Which, I mean, in real time, it only just ended a few months earlier. Just then, there's a knock on the door, and in comes Alicia with a bag of groceries. And much to Ben and Johnny's surprise, she goes over and gives Sharon a big hug, thinking that she is Ben. Oops. Meanwhile, at the Kremlin in Moscow, Stalin is worried about the U.S. president that he might launch the first strike against their forces in Germany. And he considers maybe Russia should strike first. Back at FF headquarters, Alicia finally realizes there's something not quite right with the rock monster whose face she's touching. Sue decides to ask Alicia if she's familiar with the concept of the parallel world, and she seems to know what that is. Ben speaks up, and Alicia recognizes his voice, and she can tell that he's human. "But if you're human, who is that thing?" she asks. He tells her it's Sharon Ventura, who took over his spot on the team as a resident rock monster. Alicia freaks out, yells out, "It's a trick! It's a trap!" And she tries to run, but Reed reaches out and grabs her. With Reed using his stretchy powers, she becomes a little more convinced that they're not imposters and is willing to hear them out. Reed tells her that they're the FF from an alternate timeline, and she asks where the FF from her timeline are. Good question. They're probably in the other timeline, relaxing in the knowledge that Joseph Stalin is dead and Dan Quayle isn't president. Reed asks Alicia to fill him in on the politics of the day. She tells him that things are bad. There are enough nuclear warheads to kill every man, woman, and child 25 times over. After World War II, Russia took over and occupied all of Germany, using their factories and industry to keep pace with the U.S.'s military development. And Joseph Stalin is still alive. He's now 111 years old. As ruthless as ever, he was kept alive by machines all this time. And in 1989, President Bush died of pneumonia, and Vice President Quayle became president. And speaking of the presidency, back at the White House, they're talking about how they're certain that the Russians are about to launch a first strike, so they decide to alert the media and activate the emergency broadcast system. Oh man, I used to hate the emergency broadcast system. It would always come on in the afternoon and interrupt Gilligan's Island. "This is only a test of the emergency broadcast system." And I'd scream, "Shut up! Shut up! I need to find out if they get off that damn island!" So the loud sirens go off in Manhattan. Woo, woo, woo! I've got my bomb sound effect, but I'm too lazy to go find a siren sound effect. Woo, woo, woo! Reed figures it's a warning that an attack on the U.S. is imminent, And Alicia says it means that they should listen to the radio and TV for emergency instructions. So they turn on the TV, and the guy saying, "Last-ditch efforts to avert a catastrophe seem doomed to failure. The emergency population is asked to please return home and follow the emergency planning procedures being broadcast on Channel 13. Stay tuned for further updates after the following episode of Small Wonder." See, in this alternate world, Small Wonder didn't get canceled in 1989. See, it gets worse all the time. Reed says he's got to go to his lab and get to work right away. Later, he says he's checked all the equipment, and it appears that this universe's version of Reed Richards had been monitoring the situation and getting ready for a possible World War III. He says that if the Russians don't launch a first strike, most likely the United States will. He asks Ben to go up to the hangar and get the pogo plane ready, and he asks Sue to monitor the military channels and to locate the files they have on the U.S., Russia, Germany, and the tactical dispositions of the armed forces in Europe. Finally, he tells Sharon and Johnny to stay with him and help him work on the electromagnetic pulse generators the other Reed had been working on. And so, everyone gets to work. Reed spends hours in his lab, feverishly laboring away on his equipment and a device and other weapons to deal with the crisis. After a while, Sue comes in and has discovered that the U.S. plans to launch the first attack at 0600 hours, which in non-military time, I think, means 6 o'clock? Reed's work isn't quite done yet, but he orders everyone to have everything loaded up into the pogo plane, and they'll finish it while in transit. Before they leave, Alicia comes by with a bag lunch for Ben, who promises her that her Ben will be back real soon, which he doesn't really believe. So they get on board the pogo plane, strap themselves in, and whoosh, they take off. Back in Moscow, they receive a report that the Americans are about to launch a strike using tactical nuclear missiles to destroy the Russian troops on the western border of Germany. So they decide they're going to attack first before the Americans can. Back with the FF over the Atlantic Ocean, Reed and Ben are admiring this version of the pogo plane, and Reed says he may incorporate some of the designs into his pogo plane. So they start heading over Europe, and Reed tells everyone to get ready. Back at the White House, the Americans have learned that the Russians plan to attack at 5:30 a.m., and President Quayle says they have to launch a preemptive strike. He orders the missiles ready, and the ground troops to prepare for their advance into Germany, and next, we see jet fighters from the U.S. military taking off and heading into action. On a Navy aircraft carrier in the Atlantic, more planes are launched. In missile silos across America, launch codes are confirmed, and the missiles are prepared for liftoff. At army bases in Europe, troops are armed and mobilized. A short-range tactical nuclear missile is launched, and back with the FF, Sue tells Reed they only have 15 minutes. Reed puts the finishing touches on those big bazooka-type guns. Rob Liefeld would be proud. And each member of the team gets a gun, and Reed says, "Today, we're going to stop World War III, or die trying." And that's the end of the story. And that's it for now, this episode. You can download other episodes at iTunes or find them all at www.podcastff.podbean.com. You can join the Facebook page at www.facebook.com/podcastff. If you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need any relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. So long, kids. This podcast is over.